May the words of my mouth and the meditation of all our hearts be holy and pleasing in your sight, O Lord, our rock and redeemer. Amen. In 1968, Nina Simone sat down for an interview. The famed singer, songwriter, and activist is actually a North Carolina native, by the way, the daughter of a mother who was a Methodist minister and a father who was a handyman and a preacher. And in that interview in 1968, she is asked what freedom means to her. The high priestess of soul is confident. "I'll tell you what freedom means to me," she says. "No fear. If I could have that half of my life, no fear, that would be something. Lots of children have no fear. It is really something to feel unafraid like that." No fear. I've been thinking about her response for the past couple of weeks. I have been thinking about freedom, what it looks like, what it sounds like, what it feels like. Now, that might seem like an odd place for me to start after hearing today's gospel. Today, we meet Jesus in a moment that feels like the antithesis of freedom. His teachings on divorce, they strike many modern readers as cold and calloused, even uncompromising. And it should go without saying, but let me spend just a moment here acknowledging what I take to be obvious. Often when I talk to people about divorce, it is rarely something that they hoped would be a part of their life story in the first place. For many, divorce feels more akin to Job's predicament in the Old Testament, a situation that stumbled into their life after many trials and tribulations, wreaking havoc to their sense of self, turning what they took for granted upside down. Even when it is a deliberate choice, even when the parting is received as a kindness, even when the ordeal is an amicable affair, the complexity of feelings that come along with it are never easy. And that's not to mention the situations in which abuse is a factor, where shame keeps things hidden that ought never to have happened in the first place. Fear wreaks havoc in our lives, friends. It can keep us from growing deeper in loving relationships, just as it can keep us in abusive and harmful ones. The discernment as to which is the case is exactly that, a matter of careful, honest consideration. It is something to be faced not from the pulpit, but through honest, careful dialogue with ourselves and those who help us tell the truth about ourselves. Now, that being said, let me return to Jesus and his words about divorce today. There could be several ways to interpret this passage, each inadequate in its own way. The first is popular among preachers, and it has to do with the social and cultural context, with Jesus' time and place in history. A husband who left his wife in this world 2,000 years ago could have condemned her to a life of poverty and destitution. Marriage here was a matter of survival, not affinity, and in a world where there were few opportunities available to women to fend for themselves, Jesus could have been calling husbands to account for protecting the vulnerable. That's option number one. Here is a second option. Among Jesus' early followers, the radical call to celibacy was in vogue. It was a popular option at that time. It could be that Jesus wanted to make sure his followers didn't leave families behind in their search for spiritual awakening and renewal. You see traces of it in Paul's letters as he chastises those who fall prey to the urges of the flesh. "It is good to stay unmarried, like me," he says, "but for those who cannot control themselves, well then, maybe marriage is for you." You also see it in some of the stories we tell about Jesus, the ones where he talks about leaving father and mother, brothers, sisters, and children behind for the sake of the gospel. in this scenario. It could be that Jesus is calling his followers to respect their existing familial responsibilities. Think of it as lowering the fever pitch on a particular kind of religious zeal. Finally, there is a third option. Jesus is simply doubling down on the established traditions of his time around divorce. And I have to be perfectly honest with you, even though the other options merit consideration, this one seems to me to be the most likely. Jesus provides a theological explanation for his point of view. What God has joined together, let no one separate, but he makes no mention of protecting women in the text. Jesus and the Pharisees aren't on opposite ends of an argument here either. Instead, they seem to have a lot more in common than we traditionally like to think. At the end of the day, none of these options are entirely satisfying. So, I have one more option for you. One that focuses not so much on the nature of divorce, but on the nature of the vows we make to one another. If we set the question of divorce aside for now, we can ask a different kind of question. Just what is marriage for anyhow? Now, there is a popular text used in weddings drawn from Paul's letters, the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians. You may have heard that, you know it from every rom-com imaginable that has a wedding scene in it. This text shows up there. It is a passage about love, a love that is patient and kind, one that is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. And it is a lovely passage. I am often disappointed, however, when we leave out the last few verses, which happens often. They cut out the end, the best part to me. After a long monologue about what love is and what it does, the Apostle Paul turns mystical all of a sudden. For now we see in a mirror dimly, he says, but then we will see face to face. Now I know only in part, and then I will know fully, even as I have been fully known. It's a beautiful picture of the way of love. It's as if he knows that we are opaque to ourselves, that we need one another for us to get to know ourselves. Love, the effort to love, in marriage, in community, and elsewhere, ought to bring us closer to the person we truly are, help us see the fullness of ourselves and of each other. And if not the fullness, it ought to, at the very least, help us realize there is so much more to who we are, that so many more things are possible than we first imagined. Now, as I already said, this is not exclusive to marriage. We experience this growing self-knowledge and community with one another in honest, vulnerable, and caring friendships, in ongoing habits of belonging. But marriage is a particular institution in which this is possible. And at its best, it should give us the freedom to be vulnerable, the freedom to be ourselves, the freedom to be without fear. So we return to Nina Simone, but with a paradox of sorts. We think that we are truly free when we are devoid of obligations to other people, but vows, the promises we make to one another to be alongside each other through thick and thin, they can create the space necessary for us to be truly free. We were not created to be free from each other. We were created to experience the freedom of being with each other, of knowing and being known, of being vulnerable and carefree, of being together without fear. Now, in a moment, we will also make some vows, albeit of a different kind. This will be on behalf of a young person that is about to be baptized. These are promises we make to create the space for people like Emma to flourish. May we have the courage we need to create a world in which she feels the freedom that is no fear. May we have the strength to play our part, and may we trust in God's help when we falter. Amen.